And here we go. Hour number two of The Blitz is live here on Fan Run Radio, Fox Sports Knoxville, broadcasting live on the radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. Broadcasting live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio. As always, the podcast will be uploaded moments after the show goes off the air. As always, the Periscope is live streaming right now on the Facebook and Twitter accounts that you can go and watch in case you would like to follow along with the show that way. As always, you can go check out fanrunradio.com, where there is just a slew of great content that you can go check out. Here are some of the headlines right now on fanrunradio.com. Jeremy Pruitt calls for the SEC to do the right thing by Cade Mays. Jarrett Garantano for Heisman. That's an article. Five South Carolina Gamecocks to watch on Saturday.
That's a hell of an article the conversation we just had.
That is certainly. It's also got Matt Sims on, as the cover photo.
Oh, my goodness.
What are we doing here, people?
I don't think it's real.
I think it's a
parody. I hope it's not.
I think it's a parody as well. Right answers only. Who will score the first touchdown for the Vols?
Eric Gray.
I agree. I would say the
you
same
You say
thing.
Eric Gray?
I say that.
Ty Chandler.
Okay.
Princeton Fant.
Princeton Fant, Alex.
Look.
Princeton Fant for 200, Alex, please.
Goal line, two tight end set, play action, Fant, sneak him in the flat.
The Princeton Fant answer right there is like when somebody's on Price is Right, $1, Bob.
Just wait.
$1, Bob.
Who is Princeton Fant?
Is what people will be saying when he scores the first touchdown.
Are you going to do that? You going to put that on a prop, too?
You might be able to get some pretty good odds.
Yeah, I bet you the odds.
Just drop $10. Princeton Fant. Win like $1,000.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's like probably plus $1,500
over here. Are you sure you're not thinking
here?
Of Noah Fant for the Denver Broncos? Because he is a great tight end.
He's pretty good.
He is an established tight end.
He's pretty good.
You're going to get goal line play action from the one, sneak him out in the flat, bada bing, bada boom, touchdown.
And if that were to happen, you'd be unbearable coming back in here on Monday. Princeton Fant scored the first touchdown.
So anyways, go check out fanrunradio.com. And then last but not least, the Fan Run Radio app. That is free, F-R-E-E, for you to download in both the Google and the Apple app stores. You can go check out either one. Hey, take the show with you wherever you're headed throughout the day. Again, if you're at home, if you're on the go, if you're taking a bath, you can always take Fan Run Radio with you. All right, guys, hour number one is in the books. Looking ahead to hour number two, and we got to get straight into this thing because, guys, I got questions. There are plenty of things that I want to know about coming up for Saturday night's game versus South Carolina. We're going on the road. And to preview a little bit about this game, to figure out a little bit what South Carolina is going to look like on their side of the field, we go over to Gamecocks 247, and we are joined on the show.
Over the big spur.
Oh, the big spur. And we'll get a call from John Whittle. John, thanks for joining us here on The Blitz today. We are so thrilled to have you in here, as only a couple of days away is game day between South Carolina and Tennessee. How are you doing today, John?
God, just a couple of days away. That feels so good to say, doesn't it?
Oh,
I'm doing
man.
Great.
It really does. With the amount of things that we have sat through, with the amount of uncertainty that we have had and still will have coming up this season, but, man, to think that we are only one full day away, that is exciting.
It is. It is. And, you know, I know a lot of folks didn't think we'd get to this point, but I always had a little bit of optimism. I'm a positive guy, so I'm glad we're here right now.
Well, John, this is our first time having you on the show. You cover for South Carolina, so that's obviously why we wanted to talk with you a little bit today to kind of figure out about what South Carolina is going to look like on their side of the ball, both offensively and defensively. And I think that for a lot of Tennessee fans, the first question that we have when looking at this South Carolina team is starting quarterback Colin Hill. This is obviously the transfer coming over from Colorado State. He came over with Mike Bobo. What can we expect kind of from Colin Hill, and what all went into the decision that you know of to move away from Ryan Helinski to this new quarterback Colin Hill?
Well, he is. It just on the surface level, he is absolutely a pure drop back passer. He's not going to move around at all. He might be able to move around in the pocket just a little bit to avoid a rusher, but he ain't going anywhere once he gets back there. You know, he'll He throws a nice ball, a catchable ball, as you mentioned, and as I'm sure everybody out there knows, he comes from Colorado State where Mike Bobo was, and that's really what kind of gave him a leg up in the competition over Ryan Helinski, who was the starting quarterback last year for the Gamecocks. And, you know, Colin didn't have a ton of great success at Colorado State. When you look at him numerically, he barely had more touchdowns than interceptions. His team didn't win a lot of games when he was a starter there. But, you know, I know Mike Bobo has felt really good about him. I mean, he was a starter in three different seasons, won the job a couple of times, but, you know, he had significant knee injuries. He's a guy who wasn't mobile before his injuries, and he's had three ACL surgeries since. So, you know, that's something to obviously watch, just his health in general. But you know, he came in, and because of what he's able to do in the passing game, and because he knows what Mike Bobo's offense requires, he was able to kind of beat out Ryan. And, you know, they talked publicly about how the battle was pretty close throughout fall camp, going back and forth between the two, and said Ryan Helinski was better in one scrimmage and Colin Hill was better in the other. But, you know, everything I understand kind of from behind the scenes was, you know, Colin had separated himself a little bit throughout the preseason and was a pretty clear-cut choice to get the job.
So we certainly have had our kind of debates or quarrels about Tennessee's quarterback situation here in Knoxville. But what about over there in South Carolina? What is kind of the attitude or maybe the mindset of some of the South Carolina fans when talking about Colin Hill? Or do you feel like, you know, a lot of the fan base is very excited for this quarterback switch? Or do you feel like maybe some people are a little hesitant with kind of this new guy coming in?
Well, I think it's less about Colin and more about Ryan Helinski. You know, he's a kid who was highly recruited and was the highest ranked quarterback or second highest ranked quarterback to sign in program history. And you know, there was a lot of people who really loved him, not only because of his recruiting ranking, but because of, you know, kind of what he does away from the field and his personality. And, you know, he's very involved in mental health and making folks aware of causes off the field. He has the Helinski's Hope Foundation to raise awareness about suicide and that kind of thing. And, you know, he's been a great representative of the university. He was thrown into a situation last year that wasn't ideal with an offensive coordinator that just wasn't very good and an offense that just wasn't working for anybody, much less a true freshman quarterback who played half injured a lot of the way. So he's got a lot of fans, not only for what he's done on the field, but off it. So I think a lot of folks are really disappointed that he's not the starting quarterback. I think it's less, for most people, it's less anti-Colin Hill and more pro-Ryan Helinski, but it's a very divisive subject in Gamecock land for sure. You know, there are a lot of folks who want Ryan in there as a starter and see nothing but growth out of him, as he's just going to be a sophomore. He was hurt a lot of last year, had some elbow problems, had some knee problems, and he's supposed to be healthy now and in great shape. So they want to see a little bit more of him and what he can do with a competent offensive coordinator. And they look at Colin Hill, and as I referenced earlier, he doesn't have a great resume coming from the Mountain West Conference. And, you know, now he's coming into the SEC, and people view that as not going to translate particularly well. So it's definitely a divisive topic around here.
So we know who's going to be the starter for South Carolina, but tell us about maybe some of the weapons that are around him. I know Shy Smith is still there, but, I mean, really a lot of questions around the running back position. What are some of the weapons that Colin Hill's going to have to work with?
You named it. Shy Smith, there you go. No, that's the biggest question for South Carolina coming into this season is who's going to actually go out there and make plays offensively. Shy Smith is somebody who's done a nice job in a number two role last year and, you know, in a number three role when he was back as a freshman and sophomore, when he had guys who were around him who were the focal point of the offense. And, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical if he can be a number one wide receiver in the SEC, but, you know, that's what he's tasked with being right now. There's There's another guy, wide receiver Xavier Leggett, who the staff is really high on. You know, he's a sophomore this year, and they really feel like he's going to have a breakout year this coming year. But, you know, he caught 9 passes all of last season. And, you know, South Carolina's group of receivers weren't very good. You know, their third leading receiver was a tight end who, you know, was slow and wasn't really good at catching the football, and you know, he had far fewer catches than that guy. So, you know, there are a lot of questions here. You look at the backups at wide receiver, all 3 are true freshmen, and one of those guys is the third string quarterback in Luke Doty. So there are question marks at wide receiver. You were really excited about Marshawn Lloyd, who was a top 50 overall recruit, number 5 running back in the country, but he tore his ACL in practice and is obviously out for the year. And you have 2 guys on the depth chart right now, Kevin Harris and Deshaun Fenwick, who are both sophomores and have had very, very limited time on the field, you know, during their careers. They've been behind some older guys, and you know, it kind of remains to be seen how good either one of those guys are going to be. I like some of the traits from them a little bit, but neither one are particularly game breakers, I don't feel like. But there's a lot to learn about South Carolina skill position players going into this year, and I think we'll learn a little bit going into this game, because there aren't too many guys out there who've done it with the lights on them before.
Again, we're talking with John Whittle of 247 Sports. He covers the Gamecocks for thebigspur.com. John, let's go ahead and get to the defensive side. Will Muschamp, you know, he's a defensive coach. And like Rick said earlier, we've had a lot of naysayers, a lot of struggles at the quarterback position. What are some ways and who are some key impact players on the defensive side of the ball that Tennessee fans should be looking out for? And ways that South Carolina is going to plan to disrupt Tennessee's ground game, and especially the quarterback, Jarrett Garantano.
Yeah, you know, South Carolina lost a couple of its most productive guys on the defensive line, DJ Wonnum and Javon Kinlaw. Wonnum was a draft pick by the Vikings. I think it was the 4th round, and Kinlaw was a first rounder by the 49ers. And, you know, those guys were big and disruptive. You know, Wonnum was a guy who was around for a really long time. I mean, he was a starter off and on for 4 years. And, you know, this year, South Carolina's got to replace those guys. Aaron Sterling's coming back, and he did a nice job of making plays in the backfield. Not necessarily a whole lot of quarterback sacks, but he's done a nice job in the run game with tackles for loss. J.J. Mbare was behind him last year. He's moved over to DJ Wonnum's position at the buck, and I feel like he's somebody who is really, really poised for a breakout season. Him and Brad Johnson both, who's the Sam linebacker South Carolina is going to be playing a good bit of 4-3, and Brad Johnson will be in there a good bit. And I think those 3 guys are going to be the guys who are playing in the backfield a little bit. You know, on the interior, you know, South Carolina's got a couple of defensive tackles who are on the smaller side in terms of just weight. Both of them are right around 280, 285 pounds, which isn't necessarily typical of a SEC defensive tackle. But, you know, I feel pretty good about those guys. Both are seniors, and you've got a couple of guys behind them who are a little bit bigger, who are 300-pounders, who are a little bit more sturdy if something changes in there and they need a little bit more girth. But those 4 guys are going to rotate pretty well. And, you know, I feel pretty good about South Carolina on the defensive line and, you know, what they can be able to do. Obviously, they start out with a huge challenge this week going against, you know, one of the best offensive lines in the country and what Tennessee's got. So, you know, they've got a really difficult challenge right out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, when you look at these 2 teams, John, what area do you think, matchup-wise, South Carolina has the biggest advantage, and then what area do you think will give them the most issues?
You know, I feel like South Carolina is very good in the secondary, and, you know, I know Tennessee's lost a couple of their best receivers from last year. So, mm-hmm. You know, I feel like that's a spot where South Carolina can you know, perhaps make some plays if you can force Tennessee into throwing the football a little bit. You know, Israel Mukwamu and J.C. Horn are both guys who various mock drafts have going in the first round this coming NFL draft after their junior season. R.J. Roderick is a guy who was picked on a lot last year at the safety position, but, you know, he's made some plays. He needed to become more consistent, and from what I can gather out of camp, he's done that. Jamie Robinson is back at the other safety position. He was at nickel last year and was freshman all SEC. You know, I feel like the secondary is gonna be a spot where, you know, South Carolina can make plays if they have the opportunity. You know, with the way Tennessee has the potential to run the football, they may not get too many chances, and Tennessee may be able to do whatever they want to, you know, in the run game, and would, I think, if they can. So, you know, I think that's a spot where South Carolina is gonna be okay. You know, South Carolina's just got so many question marks on offense. You know, I mean, y'all can dissect Tennessee's defense and what they can do up there so much better than I can. But it's going to be difficult to get playmakers the ball. You know, Mike Bobo is obviously a great offensive coordinator and has shown that in his offensive coordinator stops. But even at Colorado State, he showed the ability to diversify what he is known for doing. Obviously, at Georgia, he was known for running the football and creating points that way. He had some incredible receivers up at Colorado State and set all kind of records in their record book in the passing game. So he's good at finding weaknesses and figuring out ways to exploit those on defenses. But, you know, even if Mike Bobo can draw up the right play, it's still kind of to be determined whether South Carolina skill position guys can make those plays.
John, last question for me. We've been in the similar situation here in Knoxville that I would say that South Carolina might be in right now, although it's a tale of two cities right now. Tennessee, you know, they finished off strong, got a lot of momentum coming into this season, and historically, Will Muschamp has owned Tennessee. Five of the last six meetings, I do believe, and last season was ending a streak of three. When you look at the pulse of the fans and just the mood around town, are people starting to get a little fatigued from Will Muschamp? Are they starting to call for his job down there? Outside of the big win versus Georgia last season, it seems like he's kind of plateaued there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very fair. I think that's very fair. You know, there's not a lot of buzz, you know, among the fan base going into the season for, you know, some of the reasons that, you know, I listed earlier. I mean, a lot of fans, I mean, if we're being real, get excited about offense. And, you know, there's not much to hang your hat on right now in terms of what South Carolina is going to be able to do offensively. A lot of folks were really, really excited about Marshawn Lloyd, and, you know, to lose him is really discouraging. You know, a lot of folks coming into the year were really excited about what Ryan Helensky could do in year two, and he's not the starting quarterback. There's just not a lot of buzz around here right now. And, you know, Will Muschamp is very tight-lipped on what he says. He'll talk a lot and not say much of anything. And, you know, there's just not a whole lot of – there just hasn't been a whole lot of reason around here to be excited. And the last couple of years, they've underachieved. And I think one of the main reasons that there's not a whole lot of excitement going into this year about what this team can be is, you know, you look at last year going into the season, and Will Muschamp talked about, you know, it was his best team that he's had since he had been at South Carolina in his 4 years, and, you know, talked about the talent level and the depth along the lines of scrimmage and this, that, and the other. And, you know, it didn't come to fruition. And you can look back at the team and say, you know, it was his most talented team. I mean, South Carolina had more players go to the Senior Bowl than it has any other year in program history. And, you know, several guys getting drafted, several guys in the school record book. And, you know, it ended up at 4-8. And, you know, you look at what they lost and the expectations they had going into last year, and it kind of fizzling out, losing to North Carolina to open the season. And I think folks are a lot more guarded around here, both with, you know, how they're going to let their feelings be in terms of expectations, but also, you know, with the direction of the program under the head coach.
All right, John. Hey, one more question before one more question for you, kind of as we wrap things up here and get you out of here in a good and good fashion time. Okay, so we know that there are going to be fans at the stadium on Saturday night. How do you think that the fans inside of the stadium will be affecting the game? Do you consider that to be a significant advantage for South Carolina? And then finally, kind of as a second part to that question, man, when it's all said and done, when the clock expires after the fourth quarter, how do you feel about South Carolina's chances of coming out on top in that game?
Well, you know, I don't think the fans are gonna have much of an impact on this, or maybe really any games in the SEC over the course of the season. You know, there's South Carolina is able to have 20,000 people in there, or a few more than 20,000, and I think they'll be lucky to have about 15 in there based on how ticket sales have gone so far. But that's not just a South Carolina issue. That's happening, you know, around the country. Notre Dame is, you know, have less than 2/3 of their capacity show up for games, and same with Texas. You know, I think that speaks more to where fan bases are in general in this situation versus where South Carolina fans are. So I don't anticipate the, you know, 15,000 fans in an 80,000 seat stadium, you know, really affecting things too much. But you know, in terms of the game, you know, I think I'll probably upset some folks up there with what I think, especially given things I've said. You know, I'm not as high on Tennessee in general as a lot of folks are. I think this is going to be a really, really close game, I feel like both teams are going to be kind of in the low 20s, and I think South Carolina's got just as good a shot to win this one as Tennessee does. You know, it's that first game is always a sloppy one, and usually most teams are playing a cupcake and can overcome some of those things. And you know, I think it's going to just come down to mistakes. And you know, Tennessee's had a lot more guys out here recently, I think, than South Carolina has. South Carolina's had a lot of positive coronavirus cases and contact tracing and stuff early on, but you know, not so much here recently. When I put out my prediction, I still haven't done it yet, but I feel like I'm going to put South Carolina down as a winner by a couple of points. I feel like it's going to be real close, and it's not that I'm really that high on South Carolina. I think y'all can discern and figure that out yourselves, but based on what I've told y'all, that I'm not as high on Tennessee as most folks are either. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a real close game, as it typically is, aside from South Carolina giving up a couple of special team scores. You know, last year it's been really close for the last about 8 or 10 years. So I do expect a really good game on Saturday in terms of how tight the contest is. I don't know how clean it's going to be being the first game of the year, but I do expect a really tight game.
Well, we may disagree on who we think eventually will be there on top in the end, but I think that for us, we mainly do very much agree that we do think that this is going to be a close game as well. Man, that is John Whittle of 247 Sports South Carolina, the Big Spur. You can find him on Twitter at John M. Whittle, WHITTLE. John, where else can the people find you and be in touch with some of your work as we continue to do our research, getting ready for the South Carolina game here coming up?
Yeah, the BigSpur.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network, and you know, we've got some guys up there too who do a tremendous job, and across the network, we got a 60% off promotion going on right now. So there's plenty of great information on the BigSpur.com about the Gamecocks, both from a recruiting standpoint. I know that you know, both teams are going after some of the same guys, and on this game, obviously. So I appreciate anybody who drops by the site.
Well, John, we really appreciate you taking the time out of your morning to spend it a little bit with us, talking a little SEC football as we get ready for the game on Saturday. John, thank you very much for your time. Hey, have a wonderful day, and enjoy the game on Saturday.
Y'all as well. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Again, that is John Whittle of 247 Sports South Carolina, thebigspur.com, at John M. Whittle on Twitter. Man, we're going to be talking a little bit about that on the other side of the break. I have a couple thoughts. I thought he made some really interesting points in kind of talking about what South Carolina will be doing to disrupt Tennessee coming up here on Saturday night. We'll dive into it on the other side. Don't go anywhere. This is The Blitz. Oh, what a sweet song.
It's always a good song.
What a sweet, sweet song. It's just meaningful.
Takes it back to quarantine.
Again, I never sung it, but, you know, I've heard it plenty of times here on the station.
Party pooper.
Oh, come on. All right, guys, we just got finished talking with John Whittle of 247 Sports South Carolina, thebigspur.com. That conversation was brought to you by the G3 Help Me Hotlines. Look, G3 Help Me Hotlines and G3HelpMe.com. If you or a loved one have been injured in an accident, go to G3HelpMe.com. Again, that is the number 3, not spelled out, G3HelpMe.com. Again, if you or a loved one has been injured in an accident, call the Knoxville-based law offices of G. Turner Howard III. Visit G3HelpMe.com or you can call them at 865-558-8030. Serving all of East Tennessee for over 20 years, with that experience, hey, let the G3 team get you the money you deserve. That's G3HelpMe.com. Again, one more time, the phone number, 865-558-8030. Guys, I found a lot of interesting things about what John had to say, but one of the more interesting things that I thought he was talking about was kind of our last question there about the fans, right? He had said that, you know, maybe his expectation was that whether it be this game or whether it be games kind of going forward down the future, he did not expect the fans to still play that big of a role in these games. I remember coming on the show on Monday and saying that, man, just from watching NFL, I felt like there was a difference that the fans were making. What are your expectations about kind of the fan noise and what the fans can provide, knowing that it's not like the NFL where you may get one in a 5-week span? No, it's pretty much going to be every week for SEC football that there will be fans in the stands.
I'm kind of with them. I don't see that much of an influence that fans have had. We've even gotten reports, and I just saw this. It popped across the timeline earlier. Alan Bell of 247, who covers the NFL, with mostly empty stadiums around the league, already defensive offside and encroachment penalties we've seen a lot less through the first couple weeks in the NFL. And how much the fans do play a role in college. I mean, like, there's not any there. So, yeah, I don't really see them having an impact outside of a seldom roar here and there that might pick up. Yeah, there's not anybody in there to create that rumbling Death Valley or Neyland Stadium or Bryce Stadium, whatever it's called. Like, it's not the same. It definitely is not the same.
I was really kind of shocked when he said he only expects 15,000 people at Williams-Brice Saturday, and when they have a little over 21,000 allotted spots, you'd think people would be clamoring for him, fighting for him to get in, because that's normally a pretty good environment regardless of their record. There are still people going to the game, so that's surprising, but I don't expect 15,000 really have much of an impact. But in a place like Neyland, for example, if you get 25,560 people in there, and the conditions for noise are good in that stadium too, I think you can see an impact. Because sure, you might have normally 100,000, but you don't have 100,000 people yelling every play. You have, I would say, probably 50,000 people yelling every play, and half of that, I feel like out of that 25,000, you're going to get a decent amount that are pretty rowdy. I think it's going to be louder than people are expecting, and you could expect that at places like A&M or Florida, Alabama too.
Yeah, you know, I think that for the fans, when we are watching on TV at home, I don't really think that we'll notice much of it. I don't. Like, you'll certainly be able to hear the crowd, especially on big plays and things like that, but I don't think you at home are going to be able to notice it too much. But I do still hold the belief that inside of the stadium for these players, that anything is better than nothing, right? When you score a touchdown to cut the lead from 10 to 3, right, and you are clawing and scratching your way back, and you can hear those 20, 25,000 fans, I do think that for the players, that is going to make a little bit of a difference. Now, how much will it make? I'm not sure. But I do believe that for the people who are in the stadium, for the guys on the field, just at least hearing some kind of fans hearing some kind of motivation, I do think might get them over the hump in certain stretches of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything that makes it more normal is going to help. I mean, even if it's not a roaring crowd like we're accustomed to seeing in college football, I mean, I think any kind of crowd noise is better than none.
I agree. So that is that's just a little bit. Any other kind of takeaways you took from that interview?
I mean, I guess we hadn't really done a deep dive on South Carolina yet, but I mean, they don't really scare me on offense.
Yeah,
they don't, like he said, they don't really have any weapons.
Their offense last year had 4,463 total yards, if I added it correctly. I'm pretty sure I did. And more than 50% of that came from Rico Dowdle, Tavian Feaster, and Brian Edwards, who are all now graduated and in the NFL. And they also combined for 15 touchdowns.
In fairness, though, I think that's what people are saying about
Tennessee. Right.
People are saying, well, look at this. They lost Marquez Callaway. They lost Juwan Jennings. They lost their tight end, Dominic Wood Anderson. This is going to be a totally rebuilt Tennessee team. And we have very much had the mindset of, hey, we believe that we have wide receivers that are so close, that are there. They just need the opportunity. We're waiting to see who breaks out. But for everybody else, I do think that they look at Tennessee and they think, you know, man, they're losing a lot on the offensive side.
Well, at least
they got a quarterback they're not confident in. This should be a area where you can take advantage of.
At least at receiver, I think Tennessee's similar in that regard. You've got one guy that's coming back, Shai Smith for South Carolina, Josh Palmer for Tennessee. But I think where you give the edge to Tennessee is, I think, I mean, with Ty Chandler and Eric Gray, I mean, South Carolina doesn't even know. I mean, they probably have an idea of who the running back is, but I mean, Kevin Harris.
Yeah.
I mean,
look, I
think Tennessee definitely has an advantage there.
I also want to, get pressure up the middle, and I want to force Colin Hill out of the pocket. If everything that John was saying was true, that this is a guy who is not going to be looking to leave the quarterback pocket, if this is a guy who is going to be a typical pocket passer, then, man, I want pressure up the middle, forcing him either to the right or the left. And preferably, if he's a right-handed quarterback, push him to the left. I think if you can get this guy out of the pocket, and granted, I haven't seen him play, so I don't know. But, I mean, that's what you do to disrupt the pocket passer. You try to get him out of the pocket. You need a good defensive line. I don't think that, you know, if you're not getting pressure from the defensive line or from the linebackers in certain ways on Saturday night, I think this could be a situation where, look, at the very least, you do not want to let this guy sit in the pocket. I don't know how great he's going to be, but you don't want to give him his strength that's there. Send a rush up the middle. Force him out.
Yeah, I mean, you can't let him sit back there and beat you.
Guys, we've got a lot of Tennessee football. Let's go over to the hardwood. Coming up next, go a little Eastern Conference Finals. All right, guys, here we go. We got a Game 5 coming up soon. That would be, what, tomorrow night? Game 5?
Correct.
After the Heat take a 3-1 series lead against the Boston Celtics with the victory last night. That game came by a score of 112-109.
That's a tough game to watch. I mean, it was a pretty good game from a standpoint of a basketball fan and enjoying the game. But by God, that was tough to watch.
First half was terrible.
Yeah, it was just tough for me to watch Hero.
Both teams looked lethargic in the first half.
Yeah, Jason Tatum went scoreless for the entire first half. Comes up with a big 16-point third quarter. Finishes the game with, what, 30 or 28?
I think it was 25.
Yeah, 28.
28?
28, I believe. So he did come to play in the second half. But Charlie's boy, the walking bucket, Tyler Hero, had a big game.
Do not call him that.
I mean, he kind of looked like
one
last night.
He's a bucket.
He looked like one last night. Youngest guy in all of the playoffs, looking like the best player on the court last night.
I mean, in fairness, he was the best player on the court. The thing that I took away from this game yesterday, and I'll just say my one piece and get out, is pretty much the whole second half, I felt like Miami did a really good job of playing with the lead. I know the Celtics kind of came back and they were threatening towards the end of the third quarter and at the beginning of the fourth quarter. But from the second half on, Miami never really gave away their lead. They played consistently with a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-point lead pretty much the entirety of the second quarter. And I feel like that's a really tough thing to do in the Eastern Conference Finals, right? We know that basketball is very much a game of runs, and it was. But for Miami to kind of hold this lead, I was impressed by. And then the other thing, I think the story of the game. I mean, look, field goal percentage was only separated by 5. 3-point percentage was separated by about 8. And that was actually in Boston's favor. Actually, almost all of the stats were in Boston's favor. Boston out-rebounded Miami 53-49. The key to it, though, discipline. Boston had 19 turnovers on the game. Miami had 8. It's going to be tough to win like that. And the thing is that Boston was the better shooting team pretty much all night.
Yeah, and you look at it, the turnovers, too, were largely created by good defense rather than bad offense, and that's something that the Heat have been really successful with this postseason, is when they've been playing their best basketball, they've been limiting their turnovers, and they've been creating turnovers of their own, and then also converting those into points. I mean, they had 9 steals last night, and out of those 19 turnovers, and they only had 8 turnovers. So the points off of turnovers was huge. And that it's been huge in the series. The Heat have been winning games with defense, and they've just been playing defense in some of the biggest moments.
I mean, I thought the Celtics looked, I mean, they, in arguably the biggest game of the year, they came out and just laid an egg. I thought they played poorly. They turned the ball over, and the Heat did play good defense, but that they were just careless with the ball.
It was unfortunate to see the Celtics play like that, especially in the first half after all that time off. After all that time to kind of get a game plan together, to kind of figure out what you're going to do. Disappointed to see Jason Tatum come out and start the game 0-for-6. And look, that is not typical for Jason Tatum. That is likely not going to happen any other game that he plays this season. But uncharacteristic and unfortunate after such a big layoff. One thing that Van Gundy was talking about yesterday, which, by the way, Van Gundy had the line of the night when he said, "Is it because they birthed them?" Did anybody hear this weird conversation that the commentators were talking about why the mothers always get
weird.
The advantage in picking the name of the child when they were talking about Gordon Hayward's child? And Van Gundy is just so confused. He's like, "I don't get why the mom always gets that choice or always gets her way.
Why does she win every time?
Why does
you
she
really
win?
Want to get into this? Yeah, I want to get into
it." Rachel Nichols comes out of nowhere. Well, it's an easy answer, Van Gundy. Is it because they birthed them? Well, yes. Stan or Jeff. I don't know who you are.
Doris. As you like to say.
I said to Brandon yesterday, I said, "Man, you would really think that Doris would understand this part of it." But anyways, Van Gundy did have a good point, and I thought it really made sense. He kind of talked about, hey, there's a lot of coaches in the NBA who, especially in tight moments, will go to a zone for certain instances. But there's also a lot of coaches who will break the zone very quickly if the opposing team kind of gets a couple buckets in a row or gets a little bit of a run going. Spoelstra has not done that. Spoelstra has stuck with a zone throughout this series consistently. Even when the Celtics go on runs, even when the Celtics look like they're able to move the ball and beat the zone, he has stuck with it, and I think that has been a relative difference maker. Even though the Celtics have shot the ball better than the Heat, I think that it is giving them fits that is really making the Celtics uncomfortable at times.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't done it a whole lot, but when he does, he'll stick with it regardless of whether it gets beat a couple times, and in large part, like you said, it's working. The Celtics have not really attacked the middle of the zone like they should, because they're a team that likes to do a lot of different isolation stuff, and you can't really go ISO against a zone.
Brandon, game five coming up. This is obviously a must win. What do the Celtics need to do?
Do more of what you did games 1, 2, and 3. I mean, I think Besides last night, I thought the Celtics had played well.
Yeah,
up in,
I do too.
In the entire series, and you've just kind of struggled down the stretch, and the Heat made plays, and you didn't. But I mean, last night was just, to me, that's unacceptable. And they were able to hang around, and the game was close, but I mean, the effort was just not there. I mean, you gotta bring the same intensity. And now, it's win or go home. Your back's against the wall. Can you come back from 3-1? Probably not, but I don't know.
Hey,
we'll see.
Shout out Gordon Hayward for missing the birth of his son to losing five.
Is it because they birthed them?
MyBookie, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet.
Brandon has my back here.
Brandon doesn't have your back.
Not on this one.
Not on this one. Guys, this next segment and final segment of the show brought to you by MyBookie. Do you ever find yourself wishing that you could make a little extra cash during the sports season? I mean, you couldn't do that all year so far, so now is your time to do it. Well, between football season, MLB, NBA, and the NHL playoffs, it's time to get off the sideline and in on the action. Look, if you're the kind of guy who likes to, I don't know, maybe bet a little, but win a lot, well then use MyBookie. That's the best place to do it. Look, so if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because nobody gives you more of the ways to win. Right now, look, here's the big kicker. If you join right now, MyBookie will double, two times,
double
your first deposit. Use promo code Knoxville to activate
once,
this offer.
But twice.
But twice. That's promo code Knoxville to double your cash today. Visit mybookie.ag today. Huh.
Look, I just visited my bookie right now. I'm looking at tonight's game.
What is it? What are you seeing about tonight's game?
Tonight's game, we have the Dolphins taking on the Jaguars.
Oh.
And Gardner Minshew and them boys coming as a 3-point favorite. Over under sits at 49
okay.
points.
Okay.
If I was a betting man, I'm taking the over.
I'm taking the Jags with the points. Hey, what about the Western Conference final game tonight? What kind of odds we got on that one?
Looking at our Western Conference final tonight, that would be Jamal Murray and them boys. He's looking pretty good. That's Charlie's favorite team right now, the Nuggets. We got the Nuggets coming in as 6-point dogs to the Lakers. Over-under is at 214.5 on mybookie.ag.
6-point dogs are the Nuggets.
Nuggets money line, baby. Roll with it.
Nuggets money, that's the Chuck Lock.
Oh, I'm not going to call it a lock.
So we want to do the Lakers money line if you're paying attention to the show.
Man.
Instead of the Nuggets. I feel like you're every other day Nuggets winner. It's like every other game you've been calling. Has it been that way?
I've been on the Nuggets here.
You have?
Are you fired up about the beard versus mustache game tonight?
Well, it doesn't pique my interest too much, I'll tell you that.
You won't be tuned in?
I don't know if it'll be must-see television
like
for me tonight.
I'll be tuned in for like the maybe a little bit of the first half, then I'll lose interest and go to the Western Conference Finals.
I think
finals.
That's exactly kind of how
especially I'm. If Jacksonville goes up quick like I think they might. But Fitzmagic does pretty good on Thursday Night Football.
The Dolphins are a pretty good team still.
I mean, they got
they're not great, but they're competitive. I think it's going
to
be a really fun game.
They took it to the Bills
game.
The other week.
You got Miles Gaskin. Ain't that his name?
Yeah, Miles Gaskin and Jordan Howard. And Beradia have all been splitting carries there, but Gaskin has been
Beradia.
The most efficient so far.
Is it Breda?
Yeah, Breda.
You said Breadia.
I can't
that
really say it very well.
Matt,
that's one of those
Matt
last
Breda.
Names that I struggle with.
Matt Breda, I got
I'll
you.
Just admit that.
Yeah, so we got a couple sports games on tonight. Should be fun. Look, at the end of the day, you play, you win, you get paid with my bookie. Now, let's do a little if you haven't heard. Anybody got one to kick things off?
I feel like I did.
What happened?
I did. I can't remember what happened.
I have one from like last week that's still relevant that we never got to get around to.
Sure.
IndyCar has announced that they are going to be back in Nashville in their series next year. They are going to have a race that is planned to go through parts of downtown.
Street race.
Yeah, wow. A street race over the bridge that goes over the Cumberland. It'll
Korean
be the
Veterans
first one
bridge.
To go over water like this. And then around Nissan Stadium and back. and they're going to make it a 3-day festival. They want to have music, make this huge event.
Yeah,
and they're
going to
cover the cost of security and everything else, so it's no financial loss for the burden for the city. They're just going to make a ton of money.
It's going to be, from what I saw, it's going to be the biggest event in IndyCar besides the Indy 500.
That's incredible. Wow.
I mean, that and the one down in Florida, whatever that one is.
I don't know
what it's called.
I don't either.
On this day in 2013, Nothing Was the Same was released by Drake.
Great album.
I don't know if I saw it in that 500 Best Albums of Rolling Stone, but I have a lot of problems with that list. I have many problems. We'll get into it tomorrow.
500 albums? I can't even go through it to be mad at it.
4 years ago today, we beat Florida.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God, what a game. That was probably my second favorite game I've ever seen in Neyland. I still think that the best thing I've ever seen in Neyland was the Oklahoma game. I mean, I know we lost, but that was an atmosphere unlike anything I've ever seen before. That Florida game is obviously an easy number two. I mean, that was a wild day.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic has tested positive for the coronavirus.
Yeah, sorry, did you see
who?
His tweet?
Zlatan.
He had a great tweet. No, he said,
soccer guy.
It was Leighton.
Yes.
He said, I tested negative soccer to COVID guy, yes. yesterday and positive today. No symptoms whatsoever. COVID had the courage to challenge me. Bad idea.
This day in history, in 1950, future Baseball Hall of Fame slugger, the Great Bambino, becomes the first to hit 50 home runs in MLB season with a first inning blast off of Jose Acosta in a 2-1 loss to the Washington Senators.
Go Nats.
Shout out to the Babe. Also, today's days are National Punctuation Day.
Okay.
National Cherries Jubilee.
Oh, the millennials don't like the punctuation.
No, they don't.
We learned that a couple weeks ago.
No, they don't. And it's also Schwenkfelder Thanksgiving.
I'm sorry. What?
Schwenkfelder Thanksgiving.
What?
I'm guessing it's German Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I'm thankful.
Okay. Yeah, a little early Thanksgiving. Very nice. Gentlemen, that'll do it for us here today. Man, when we step back into the studio tomorrow, it'll be the game day eve. Get ready for it. It's going to be great. This has been The Blitz. Fan on Radio. See you tomorrow.